Good morning, afternoon, or evening. Haven't done that intro in a while. We are back, Bostopian News with Evan George. And I know that last week I told you that I would be doing an episode specifically about the combat zone, which really began what ended up being a two-week obsession to try to figure out the history of Boston's liquor license laws. And I will still definitely do that episode. However, there is another book that I want to read just about the combat zone, titled Inside the Combat Zone, that was highly recommended. It was written by Stephanie Shurow. And so once I get through that, I will do my big episode on the combat zone. And for this week, we had a big moment in Boston local politics with, as many things always start, a tweet, this by Kelly Garrity from Politico. New, Boston City Councilor Erin Murphy is running for the Suffolk County Supreme Judicial Court clerk seat Mara Doyle is vacating. Quote, I feel that my decades as an educator and my time on the Boston City Council has prepared me to take on what will be an important role as the clerk of the Supreme Judicial Court, she tells me. And if you're like me, you read that tweet and thought, what the hell is the Suffolk County SJC clerk seat? And why do we even vote on that? What is this? Why are we even voting on clerks? I don't understand. I thought these were just people that the judges picked or something. Or it was just like a paid government position. Why is this an elected role? And so then I had to read about it so I would know. And I figured if I spent the time reading about it, I got to tell someone. So it might as well just be all of you. But before we go into the nitty gritty, just to do some of the more meta stuff first, Erin Murphy can run for the seat while being on the council. So there is absolutely no risk to her doing this. And we'll get into why she's doing it in a little bit. But she'll be able to fundraise. She'll be able to expand her name recognition. So there's no downside, win or lose. And that is all especially true in, you know, the post-Trump era, where whatever, like, shame anyone ever felt from running and losing, you know, the stink of being a loser, that doesn't exist. There is no downside to running for office if you are ambitious, even if you run and lose. The only times where you can kind of get yourself into trouble is if you vacate a current seat to try to run for something higher, but then you get knocked out and you got to spend a few years in the private sector making the same, if not even more money. So again, like, there really isn't a downside to this. And in terms of the stakes of this, I would love for Erin Murphy not to be on the Boston City Council. She is by far one of the most conservative voices. If you listen to the podcast episode that I did maybe about a month and a half ago that looked back on the numbers of the general election, she performed better than every other candidate. I know in terms of the actual, like, total numbers, Ruthie Lujan was the number one vote getter. I think the margin difference between them was like 600-700 votes. It was very minimal. They were just off of each other by a tenth of a percentage point. But Erin Murphy increased ground at a higher percentage across the entire city. She increased her gains more than Ruthie did, and most certainly more than Julia did. And then when you combine that with she has just been a lot more careful and considerate and deliberate of when she speaks, and she has formed this partnership with Boston Herald specifically, Gayla Cawley, and just being a resource and a source to get her message and her politics out there in a way that doesn't come back on her for, you know, stirring the pot or causing dysfunction or disruption. So she has been getting smarter and more politically powerful. And that's why at first I was a little surprised at the announcement, because I thought she just had a lot more ambition in her. But then I had to remember, or again, remind myself that she can run for this position, and if she loses, she's exactly where she is currently, and with maybe just a little bit even more name recognition. And should she be successful, she basically will have the easiest kickback job probably in the government of Massachusetts. This position Now, according to a Boston Globe article that talked about like pay changes in 2017, they currently cited this seat. This is back in 2017 at $153,523 a year. And then they were discussing at that time a raise to $167,000. And again, that was 7 years ago. Another website, openpayrolls.com, Mara Doyle, who is the current person in the seat, they have her listed at $189,324.79 for the most recent record in 2022. Now, I'm not going to dig any more than that, but it's safe to say that from that Globe article, from this, this is a position which is about, we'll call it $180,000 a year to basically set an agenda. And I'll talk more specifically about like what this is, just so people just know what it is. But this is, again, one of the penultimate BS jobs that she can just sit there in obscurity. It is a 6-year term collecting all of this money out of the public eye to do basically nothing. Like, in my mind, this was a government-paid position, maybe like 90 grand, 100 grand a year, to basically just like set the paperwork for the court. And so, again, I want her off the Boston City Council. And if this is a way of doing it for this meaningless role, like how much input? I know if you get to craft an agenda, you have a lot of input, but it really seems like this is just a paper shuffling job. And I am not worried about who holds it. And now, if she is successful and she gets this job, she cashes in. Why not? And we'll talk about how long these people hold these positions, because this is just one of many of these elected positions that no one knows what they do. So people just get to sit there as long as they want in obscurity. And if she's successful, then it goes to the fifth place winner for the at-large election, which would be Bridget Nee Walsh. Now, everything that I have seen from Bridget shows me that she will vote the same exact way as Erin 99, if not 100% of the time. Their vote is the same. But where one, you're taking someone who is just building steam, building clout, building capacity, and replacing it with just a person who, I mean, they'll be in office for about a year, and then they already just have to start running for re-election, won't have as much name recognition, won't have as much money, won't have as much experience. And so this would be a much easier person to knock off than Erin would be, who is basically a lock. She can have that at-large seat seemingly as long as she wants, at least in the foreseeable future, judging by how her numbers were. But Bridget could be knocked off. So I guess to put the cart before the horse, there's got to be a more modern expression. Ultimately, Erin, you want this seat? Go for it. Have a ball. I mean, you're cashing in off really nothing. But hey, that's politics. And I can't really stress enough how little risk there is involved in this. I mean, there is another person who's declared. And so let's just briefly mention her as well. Allison S. Cartwright, and this is her making this known in a post on February 17th, which cited the February 16th Dorchester Reporter article, which said that she will not be seeking re-election. With deep appreciation, I thank Mara S. Doyle, clerk of the SJC for Suffolk County, for her public service to the people of Suffolk County and the state of Massachusetts over the course of the past 28 years. Oh yeah, this previous woman had this seat for 28 years. Under her leadership, the clerk's office has delivered top-notch services to citizens, attorneys, and litigants, and our state's highest court, the Supreme Judicial Court. As a firm believer that our systems of justice must constantly evolve and be held accountable to the people, I am exploring the opportunity to run for the position of the clerk of the Supreme Judicial Court for Suffolk County. Stay tuned. And I know that she was on a police reform task force set up by Marty Walsh. Task force are meaningless, but still, maybe she has some good and some great principles. According to her LinkedIn, she is an attorney and the managing director for the Committee for Public Counsel Services. And maybe I'll answer that other question now. Does Erin Murphy need to be a lawyer or an attorney or pass a bar exam to do this job? No, she doesn't. Now, if she wanted to sit on the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court, And I don't know if this is true for every like state appellate court. I'm sure they have their own standards. My guess is they do, because here are the qualifications that you need to have to sit on the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court. Just reading from you off of the MassachusettsCourtRecords.us, where you can look on Massachusetts Court Records under this section. How does the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court work? Quote, as opposed to some other states, justices in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts do not have fixed terms. Instead, the judges serve lifetime terms after receiving approval. However, these justices may only remain in office until the compulsory retirement age of 70. At this age, the justices must retire. I wish we had direct elections of judges like other states do, but I also kind of like that age of retirement law. Though I kind of have the feeling, because when people talk about like term limits and are they good, are they bad, I think it ends up being a wash, meaning you could imagine there are some great judges who you want to stay on the court because they vote the way that you want them to, but then once they hit 70, they have to leave and then you risk being replaced by someone. Like, it kind of works both ways. And that's why term limits, I think, is just like a wash. It doesn't really benefit one quote-unquote side or the other. But anyway, continue reading. Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court justices must be under the age of 70, must also be citizens and residents of the United States and the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, respectively. In addition, all justices must be members of the state bar in good standing and must have at least 13 years of legal experience and training. So those are the requirements to sit on the court. But if you just want to be a clerk, yeah, you don't need that. And maybe now we'll go into like what this position is and a little bit about the history of it, because I have like a guess why we have to vote on this. It's a complete guess and it's kind of funny, but it's the best I got for you. But okay, what is this job? Now, according to, you know, mass.gov, SJC Clerk's Office for the County of Suffolk, which such a mouth. About the Clerk's Office for the County of Suffolk. The Clerk's Office of the County of Suffolk is primarily responsible for the single justice caseload of the Supreme Judicial Court, administrative and disciplinary matters filed by the Board of Bar Overseers affecting the members of the bar and members relating to bar admission and the practice of law in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. And then it seems like this is broken down into three different key departments. One, attorney services, which they label here as the Attorney Services Department receives and maintains petitions for admission to the Massachusetts Bar. So basically, they manage the paperwork for people who are trying to get licenses to practice law in Massachusetts. But is she like the sole arbiter who gets to decide that? I highly doubt it. I think she just like structures the paperwork. Just reading more. Coordinates the formal admission ceremony for new attorneys, issues certificates of admission and good standing, so she gives out certificates, processes applications for student practitioners and attorneys from foreign jurisdictions. Yeah, it's basically just moving papers. Now, the second key department, Supreme Judicial Court, Single Justice Practice and Procedure, one sentence, this department is responsible for the single justice caseload. So basically, like, what cases are they going to see? Now, she doesn't get to pick that, or the person who holds this office. I'm probably just going to keep saying she, because when we're referring to Erin and to the current person, her name is Mara. And then finally, the bar docket. This department is responsible for matters filed by the Board of Bar Overseers. And what are all these things? The bar's docket administrative matters may include the appointment of a commissioner in the event of attorney's death or disappearance, transfer of an attorney to disability inactive status, and the enforcement of a subpoena. So again, everything that I read basically just says paperwork. Now, this is also kind of summarized in the Boston Sun in their Thank You, Mara Sweeney Doyle article from March 1st of this year. Although the clerk's job is elected only by the voters of Suffolk County, the clerk serves the entire state in two important areas. The first is that the office handles all petitions to a single justice of the SJC from throughout the state. Requests for injunctions and other emergency relief, including all petitions from which there is no specific statutory authorization to another court, are handled through the office of the SJC Clerk of the Suffolk County. So the paperwork for the judges, and then it also mentions that they handle the applications for the Massachusetts Bar. So again, people who want to practice law. And it, you know, now gives the sentence, which I think is the most important thing about this position. Generally speaking, both of these functions are what are referred to as under the radar in terms of the public's perception, and only when there is a mishap do they receive public scrutiny. So this is a job where, as long as you can just keep track of paperwork, we elect you for a 6-year term at over $180,000 a year. And as I mentioned before, our current person, Mara S. Doyle, has had this seat since she was first appointed in 1996, and then on October 21st, 1996, just reading from her biography off mass.gov, she was sworn in and became the first woman to hold the position since its inception in 1693. Now, I'm not going to do a full history. Very quickly, though, the first charter for Massachusetts was in 1629. It established the Massachusetts Bay Company. Basically, it was the king's permission saying, sure, this company, you can go over there. You give us some of this stuff back. You got our protection, yada, yada, yada. And then in 1691, because of a few different events, one of them being the Glorious Revolution in England, but also some rowdiness here in Massachusetts, something called the 1689 Boston Revolt, essentially the royal government said, okay, we're now going to have a new deal, second charter, 1691, and now you are an actual colony. You are part of the royal empire. You're no longer like this little private company who gets to get beaver pelts. And then as part of that charter, they established the court. Now, there was something very important happening here in Massachusetts, and you have all read about it and seen movies about it just around this time. And I'm going to read from you straight again from the mass.gov website about the Supreme Judicial Court. In 1691, at the urging of Reverend Increase Mather, rector of Harvard and pastor of the Second Church in Boston, King William and Queen Mary issued a charter which established the province of Massachusetts, known as the Second Charter, and authorized the provincial government to erect and constitute judiciaries and courts of record. During the spring of 1692, a witchcraft hysteria gripped Salem and its environs, which is just a fancy word for like the surrounding community. Colonial Governor William Phipps, spelt P-H-I-P-S, appointed a special court of oyer and termer to hear and determine charges of witchcraft within the counties of Essex, Middlesex, and Suffolk. This court permitted spectral evidence, the testimony of an alleged afflicted person, that the accused had appeared in the form of an apparition. So like a ghost. Between June 2nd and October 29th, 1692, the two courts sentenced 20 people to death. This court was dissolved at the end of October 1692, but several dozen people remained in prison awaiting trial of the charge of witchcraft. On November 1692, the General Court passed legislation creating the Superior Court of Judicature and various lower courts. The five justices of the newly established Superior Court of Judicature, and my God, I hate saying that word, sat for the first time on January 3rd, 1693, in Salem. The new court, which ignored spectral evidence as unreliable, heard the cases of the 26 persons accused of witchcraft. 23 were found not guilty, and the remaining three were later pardoned by the governor. So what I think happened is that with the passage of our second charter, there came the realization that we just needed a highest court, the court of last resort, for this new royal colony. And with that, I guess we're going to need someone who can just handle the docket and the paperwork. Now, at this time, I mean, still today, we don't get to vote on our judges. And I believe the current system is they are appointed by our governor and then need to be approved by the governor's council, which is mostly very similar to this clerk position. It is another one of these BS jobs that just exists. We really should just get rid of it. I mean, those powers could just become absorbed with the Massachusetts Senate if we wanted to, if we felt that there needed to be some sort of a check on the governor. But they're basically just rubber stamps. Anyway, our system for getting judges on this court really hasn't changed much. Like at this time in 1692, they still needed to be nominated and appointed by the governor and council. So we haven't changed this law in 332 years. You know, might want to update it, get some more democracy. But anyway, that's a statement on judges, and we're still just talking about the clerk. And I got to be honest, there's really not much about the history of this position because it's so meaningless. And I want to give you a list of other meaningless jobs that we have that we, for some reason, have to vote on. But just to really hit home how much of a sweet mail ticket it is, like how little you have to worry at all of ever being challenged or removed from this position. Here is the last 54 years of this position. Are you ready? 1970, John E. Powers won the Democratic primary uncontested. No one even ran against him. He then won in the general election, and there were no Republican candidates. This is a six-term position. Another 6 years go by. 1976, Powers again, unchallenged in the Democratic primary, unchallenged in the general election. Another 6 years. So it takes 12 years. And I just went up to 1970 because that's as far back as the elections website, like, kind of lets you go, like, easily to kind of compile this type of information. So it takes 12 years. And I don't know if John was on the was in the seat before that, that now he finally has at least a primary opponent. He still wins. It's 56.9% to 43.1% from Richard L. Walsh. Pretty good showing. I'm guessing the guy had pretty strong backing. But then Powers goes on again to win the general election because there were no Republicans running against him. And at some point, he vacates the seat. Again, he's now been in office anywhere from 12 to 18 years, assembling an agenda. And so he leaves, and now you have your first kind of open seat, 1988. It's a four-way race. It's actually very close. Ends up being Richard J. Rouse, who takes it with 31.3%, just beating out 29.2% of the second-place finisher. And then again, 1988, Richard wins because we still don't have anyone in the Republican primaries challenging him. So now he sits for 6 years, and it looks like he decided to move on from there. Doesn't run again in 94. So now we have kind of another open seat, and a John A. Nushi ends up winning. Another four-way race. This one wasn't as close. However, just a few years go by. There's a special election, which means for some reason that guy's out. And now we have Mara Doyle winning in 1998 in a special Democratic primary against no one. Yet again, general election, no one. And now here's Mara's term. So there's another election in 2000, because again, it's a six-year term. She won in a special election. You're still going to follow that like six-year format. 2000, Mara wins. No primary opponents, no general opponents. 2006, she has one opponent, Peter J. Walsh. It's the same guy who ran in 1994, who came in second. He tries again. I think he's a perennial candidate, because that name seems very familiar to me. Mara wins. 2-1 margin, takes 68.1%. Yet again, general election, no Republicans. Why don't Republicans run for the seat? Whatever. I mean, I can guess why. 2012, Mara again. No opponents in the primary, none in the general. 2018, none in the primary, none in the general. All of that history is to show you that once you have the seat, you are a lock. No one knows what it does. I've just been talking about it for 20 minutes. I can barely remember myself what this position does. And it's just one of those seats that we just have because we've had it for centuries. And it made me think, all right, what other just BS things do we have to vote for? And so from the Secretary of State website, they have all the elected offices. Okay, we have president, vice president at the federal level. We got it. U.S. Senator, U.S. Rep. Okay, now we're down to the state level. We have the governor. We all get that. And then we separately have the lieutenant governor. Kim Driscoll is our current one. And already we just start with, do we need this job? I mean, the lieutenant governor of Massachusetts doesn't even have their own website to describe like what this office does. It's mashed together, Governor Mara Healey and Lieutenant Governor Kim Driscoll. And you can learn about like the bio of Kim. But in terms of describing what does this do, there's really even nothing on the website. And now if you go look at the Massachusetts Constitution, which I had to do to try to figure this out, it basically mirrors like the vice president of the United States. So one, if it says like if the chair of governor is vacant because of a death or an absence, okay, the lieutenant governor, you're up next. And then the only other thing they do is that they also sit on the governor's council. So there's 8 members of the governor's council plus the lieutenant governor. I don't know if they always vote. I think they do get a vote, but regardless, that is a rubber stamp institution. It is meaningless. I think it should be just done away with. It is not a democratic check on anything. So, second position, we already have our next, what I would argue, BS job here in Massachusetts. All right, now we have Secretary of the Commonwealth. Kind of need to have a separate person who does the elections. We'll allow it. The Attorney General, okay. Treasurer and Receiver General. All right, we know what a treasurer does. Somebody just track the money. Auditor, we vaguely get what that does. Okay. Now we're in, and everything I just labeled to you is a 4-year term. Governor's Council is every 2 years. Meaningless. They do nothing. Rubber stamp. They approve whatever judges the governor wants. It's another one of those positions that once you're on it for years. Then we have our state senators, our state reps, our district attorneys, the sheriff. And then finally we enter the next 4, which I think are all meaningless. I mean, like I'm going to remove the county positions because some of the counties, they still just operate as like their own like fiscal entity in some ways. So county commissioner, county treasurer, fine. I'm not going to weigh in on that. Register of the probate, register of deeds, clerk of courts, all 6-year terms. All right, you ready for this? Here's what I've been able to piece together about the register of probate. Now, there is apparently not just one, but according to a 2014 article by Edgar B. Herwick III from GBH, that there are actually 14, and that they each run a county's probate and family court system. So we have what's called the probate and family court. Every county has one. We have one here in Suffolk County. And that this is the court where if you're getting divorced, if you're adopting a child, if you're doing something with your will, you need to go to. And apparently, because so many people go to this court to get done some things that are just filing paperwork, for example, they don't have lawyers with them. And even with a lawyer, all of our court systems is so confusing. But like, what step are you on? What do you need to do? That from what I gather, this person's role is basically a customer service position to help people understand where they currently are at and what they need to get done. And they just manage that office. And now none of that is explained on multiple different courts' websites. Even trying to figure out like who ours is here in Suffolk was a pain. Apparently her name is Stephanie L. Everett. And she was appointed because we had a vacancy, and I think this upcoming general election in November, we get to pick a new person. And I also believe that Stephanie tried and failed to run for the Massachusetts House. And in terms of pay for this position, well, according to that 2014 article, it was $130,000. So it's safe to say that today, that position is probably closer to $150,000. For, again, what seems to be, like, customer service. And I know, like, I'm normally the democracy guy, and it's hard for me to say that, like, I would rather these be appointed positions or just, like, you know, hired in some capacity. But it just is weird that we have them and that we vote on them, and no one really knows what they do. It doesn't really seem like something that needs to be an elected position. But I think just, like, changing the laws for some of these things, which are centuries old, would just be such a pain that everyone's just going to say, okay, we'll have these obscure jobs. You get to hold them for 6 years, make bank, no one will bother you. And the only other one, because we've talked about the clerk of courts, is the register of deeds. And this appears to be another one where each county has their own person. Here in Suffolk, Stephen J. Murphy. And it appears this is just another paperwork job. Like, in an interview with Jamaica Plain News, and this is back in 2018, here's how Murphy describes it. The job of the Register of Deeds is to keep the land records for Suffolk County accessible, reliable, and secure. And it's just like, why is this an elected position? You're just somebody who gets people's paperwork. And what, you just stare at the computer and make sure no one accesses it? Like, I don't understand. But I think I'm just going to fall back on my belief that those three positions in particular, Register of the Probate, Register of Deeds, Clerk of Courts, is just centuries ago, they were appointed positions. And then while other things started to enter into the democratic sphere, you had to vote on them, it kind of just got lumped in as, like, you know, one of the very few municipal jobs or, like, state jobs that existed that wasn't a direct elected representative. Like, think of the scale of government in, like, the 17th and 18th centuries, very, very small. But then with, like, the 19th century, things all started to get very, very complex. And so these positions that were either appointed, and then in the 19th century, with the whole democratic movement, also started to become, like, within the focus of elected positions and people saying, well, hey, if this is a position with my tax dollars, I should have a say in who it is. But then the size of municipal and state and federal governments ballooned to such a level that it's just not feasible to have everyone vote on every position. And so many just became like department heads and appointments. But for some reason, those three here in Massachusetts, we kind of just overlooked and figured, we'll keep it on the books. People can vote on it. And of course, these are just not really contested elections. And the people sit there for a while. And that is ultimately what so many politicians want. There are those who get into this game because, like, their parents did it, because they want the attention, because they think they're smarter than others. They watch The West Wing too many times. They just envision themselves and their fans and people holding signs with their name and sharing their name. And then, you know, once you have those positions, you realize how unglamorous it really is. And it's kind of boring and it's tedious and you're still being watched and scrutinized by people with TikTok accounts like me. And you figure, oh, you know what? I just want an easy job. I just want to sit back and collect a check. And, you know, unless you're part of the Massachusetts House where you get to do that anyway, because no one's going to challenge you in an election, Boston City Council, you kind of have to sing for your supper. You still got to go out there. You still got to fundraise, and it's such a grind. And so why not just take a load off and just sit there and shuffle papers for 6 years for $180,000 a year? And, you know, when you have one of those outs, you don't have to risk anything, like Aaron Murphy. Why not? Why not take it? So I'll be keeping my eye on this race, mostly because of how it affects the Boston City Council. I kind of hope she gets it, to be honest. I mean, unless somebody can convince me that who this person is actually holds a lot of power, then I would almost just say it's worth going with Allison. Though still would have to look more into that person. But who knows? Now, I hope you enjoyed this episode on meaningless election posts that we have here in Massachusetts, because I had to sit here for hours to try to figure out what these dumb jobs are. And at the top of that list is the clerk's position. And if you would like to help support more podcasts where I learn about obscure elected positions, you know the best way to do it. Patreon.com/Bostopian News. Next up, should have a great interview on immigration, its impacts and misconceptions here in Massachusetts and in Boston. Really looking forward to that. And I just got another book in, and I'm hoping to interview the author, but I have not yet set up those connections, so don't want to disclose who that is. But as always, keep track of everything, patreon.com/Bostopian News. And if you don't have the financial means to support, that's okay. All of my content is free just for you. And with that, take care. And as always, hope you have a great rest of your day.